Happy Halloween, everyone. On this episode of Movies Ruined My Life, we're talking John Carpenter, specifically in 1980's The Fog and 1998's Vampires. So which film are you arguing for, Trevor?
I am arguing for The Fog.
1980, nice.
Yeah, which I didn't see until maybe my mid-20s.
Right on.
Yeah, so it was one of those ones that I was like, okay, I need to dig a little bit deeper into his catalog. And I was out at the old Suspect Video, and I'm like, The Fog, this looks cool. I have no idea what it's about, but it's John Carpenter. I have to check it out. And I, you know, it was one of those nights where I'm like, I'm not doing anything. I'm sitting at home. I'm going to watch a scary movie in the dark. And it was perfect. I loved it. It's become one of my favorite horror films of all time.
We had talked about it a little bit, Trevor, in the Wes Craven episode, these names that, these marquee names in horror, especially, say, for example, circa 1980, 1990, that drove us back to the video store over and over again, or to the theaters. And Carpenter's definitely one of those voices, I feel like, one of those unique talents.
It's a brand. It's a brand. Yeah. Horror directors, you know, you know that there's going to be something interesting to take from something, even if it isn't necessarily their best work. You're going to enjoy it. And that's part of the reason why I like The Fog. I don't think it's his best film, but it's creepy as hell. And, you know, it's... The film starts out around a campfire, and there's a bunch of little kids there. And there's something I could really relate to that whole situation, because really, I don't know about you, but some of my earliest experiences with fear and understanding horror come from being a kid going to scout camp and hearing ghost stories around the campfire. And there isn't a lot of films that sort of touch on that, sort of look at it from that perspective. This is a ghost story. You know, we started getting fearful of things from these types of stories, you know, with a good backstory of history. In this film, there's a story about a bunch of merchant sailors who saw a fire on the beach. And they went towards it, but it was very foggy and could not see that there was a lot of rocks, and ended up hitting the rocks and dying. It was a very foggy night. And then this film, you know, after you hear that story around the campfire, takes place exactly 100 years from that night.
100 years, yeah.
And the fog is moving in some very unusual ways, and the locals have to sort of navigate around town without getting attacked by the fog that seems to move away from the way the wind is blowing, which is not possible in real life. But yeah, it's cool. I was always interested in radio. I ended up having my own radio show on York University station, CHRY, for a while. I ended up doing a bit of pirate radio out of my apartment in Ottawa, in which I got busted. But I was in love with the Christian Slater film, Pump Up the Volume. So anytime I see like radio and radio shows, radio setups, you know, they have an interesting setup. Not completely unlike this room right now. Except this is at the top of a lighthouse overlooking the water. Yeah. So it really is a really good way of communicating a lot of what's going on with the fog, because this person could see the whole town. Yeah, and communicate to everyone instantly at a time where, you know, everyone didn't have communication devices on. So the radio is a perfect way for handling that.
And when I think of Adrien Barbeau, I think of this film, too. A lot of people say Escape from New York, which Devin's going to talk about later, but I think of this flick. This is the one for me. Much like you, I've always been in love with radio, and this is her standout role for me. Also not Swamp Thing, which you already kind of...
Yeah, yeah. I was watching it with my missus, and she's like, not this girl again. So we just finished watching all those Wes Craven movies. And yeah, and we watched Escape from New York preparing for this as well. Yeah, she's perfect. I believe she was in a relationship with John Carpenter.
They were married,
at the time.
And they have a son, Cody.
Yeah.
Who's the son that's touring with him on the Lost Tapes right now.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Sweet. I would love to go see that if it comes to town.
Yeah, me too. I'm keeping an eye out.
Yeah, I know someone who went to the States to go catch one of his shows.
He's got to come up here sooner or later.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Need a paycheck.
Yeah. Anyways, so back to The Fog. You know, people don't know this, but John Carpenter did have to go back and do a lot of reshoots on this film because he realized it just quite wasn't as brutal. It was as other films coming out at the time, Scanners being one of them. And they're like, yeah, people aren't going to really like it, so we have to make it a little bit more brutal. So they did a couple extra weeks of reshoots just to add, you know, more violence to the parts where the ghosts come out and attack people.
Mm-hmm.
Spoilers for
Okay, so why should people go out and watch this flick tonight?
Because if you're looking for a good story, like a nighttime story, bedtime story, a ghost story, The Fog delivers in spades. Yeah, yeah. You have characters that are running from a force that we all see, you know, from time to time, a fog going around. It's creepy. You're walking around a park at night and you see fog, you're creeped out.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know what's lurking behind them. It could be a bunch of angry sea mariners. Yeah. Also, you never know. You never know. You also see another performance of Jamie Lee Curtis, which she doesn't really have much of a role. I think she might have just been put in the film. I don't know if it's because of pressure from the studio to have her in another horror film, or maybe he just liked her. But she really doesn't serve much of a purpose in the film other than to be sort of an outsider that's stuck in the same situation.
I've seen interviews with Jamie Lee Curtis on this film where she said something to the effect of John Carpenter was very surprised that she wasn't getting a ton of film work after Halloween. When he brought her back for this film, he couldn't believe that you know, this was her immediate follow-up, with the exception of a little bit of television that she did in the interim. And then this film, kind of in conjunction with Halloween, was what kind of kicked off her Scream Queen status, per se.
She was also in the movie with her mother.
Yeah.
Janet Lee Janet from Lee. Psycho. Which is another character. There's a lot of characters that, like, that's the thing. If people are going to criticize this film, is a lot of characters really don't have a whole lot to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's more about the backstory, and just anybody in the town could get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they find a lot of the history through a book that a priest finds just randomly behind a wall.
Yeah.
Right after a scene with John Carpenter yeah. himself, who in an interview, he said that after doing that scene, he realized that he should not be doing scenes in his own movies anymore. So I think he only had a couple of cameos as like dead bodies or something, but no more acting roles for John Carpenter. Yeah, I was watching some of the behind the scenes footage too, and apparently one of the kids that is on the beach hearing the ghost story has now become a big Hollywood director.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. I forget the name of the person. I had not heard of them, but apparently they've done some work.
Right on.
Yeah, it's interesting how
it's that is really interesting, because James Cameron got his big break on Escape from New York, didn't he?
Really?
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure that he was working in an effects department at the time and got his big break on Escape from New York.
Well, I guess it's a small world, you know, the sort of lower budget independent filmmaking crowd. Like, you tend to, if you're in a family that's working on that, then because all the kids were like family members of people who were working on the set. Yeah. They weren't like actors. So, I guess you're around it. You end up soaking it up and sort of having contacts and being able to move forward with things. I guess it's interesting. You know, maybe we should have been born in the 60s out in the West Coast.
Have a very different life.
So.
Although he was born in... he was born in... Ohio. Grew up in Kentucky.
I wouldn't have any clue.
Or born in New York, I'm sorry.
You know, I'm more the type of person, I know you love the stories behind the films almost more than the actual films. You talked about this a little bit on the Wes Craven Marathon episode. But me, I'm more about the content. Like, half the time I don't even remember the actors' names. I had to look up Tom Atkins' name, and I'm like, this guy's in everything, you know? He's in Escape from New York, and, so one of the things that's both really creepy and great is when he just, like, picks up Jamie Lee Curtis, and he's, like, an old man with gray hair, and he picks her up, and as a hitchhiker, and, first thing he does is offer her a beer because he's drinking a beer. And then the next scene, they had finished making love. You know, it's just like, this is what happens when you pick up young, nubile hitchhikers. Oh, they just like end up in bed with you. It made me a little uncomfortable. I'm like, this doesn't seem right. But good for him. You know, she was hot back then. And then she just follows him around. And then there's a great line because they go there. He's looking for, he was supposed to borrow a ship. The ship guy who runs the ship wasn't back in time. So him and Jamie Lee Curtis go out on the water looking for the ship. And they end up finding the ship. And the ship is completely empty, you know? Except there's a lot of weird things on the ship, like salt water where it shouldn't be, you know, inside of beer cans. But the rest of the ship is fine. You know, and it's all because the supernatural powers situation going on with the fog is all related to the sea. So any the sort of salt water leads is sort of like spiritual ectoplasm, so to speak. and then they find a dead body, and Jamie Lee Curtis, her line is... okay, I think it's time for me to go back to Vancouver. I'm not going to spoil the whole film, but there's some interesting sort of backstory too that relates to the history of the church in that town and I'm not a religious person. However, any time that there's like sort of like spiritual sort of religious history intertwined with a story, that really gets me. It's like part of a good scary story, you know? Like, I love the Omen movies. I've said before, anything to do with sort of the history of the church and old times, and you're talking about like curses and stuff like that, if the church is thrown in there with that, it sort of adds a little bit to it. And another part of reason why I really like this film is it's just beautiful. It looks really, really nice.
It does look great.
I'm sure there's some crappy prints out there. Some of the extras on the Blu-ray, you know, you could tell that there was some crappy prints out there, but what's available now, and I don't think a lot of it was like fully restored because there was still some bad parts to it. I think the just film was shot really, really well, really DOP. It's a good film that anybody could get into. If you're not super into horror for a lot of the reasons that people don't like, say, Halloween, or even The Thing, you know, things constantly jumping out at you at random times, a lot of blood, a lot of gore. None of that is in The Fog, and some people might be put at that. It's more about the tone, you know, it's just creepy. when bad things are happening, you know things are coming. The music fits perfectly with it. The radio DJ really holds the movie together and sort of lets you know what's going on throughout the film in a way that keeps the pacing perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the slow moving fog comes in, and then the spirits come. It's a nice idea, you know. And you can escape it if you can drive fast enough away with the beer in your hand.
Now, I've never seen the Selma Blair, whoever else, 2006 remake. Is this also worth checking out?
No, absolutely. And if you've seen that and be like, oh, I don't want to see the original Fog, that film is fucking shit. No, it doesn't count. It's just like a generic, like, teen sort of, like, they take the basic ideas of the film and then sort of ignore the rest of it. Mm. They take, you know, a couple plot points, which... there isn't a lot of plot points in it, you know. Yeah. It's a simple story, but that's how ghost stories are supposed to be. And just sort of just make it into a generic teen supernatural thriller, and it's garbage. You know, maybe I'll rewatch it one day, but yeah. I wouldn't recommend anyone else do it. You know, I saw it when it first came out on video, and I'm like, yeah, this is shit. This is nothing like the original. I'm going to go rewatch the original because that's great. And that's what you should do.
Hey, everyone. So next week on the show, the Hannibal Lecter films. We hope you'll join us then.
All right. So we're back. And Crystal, you are up.
Yeah.
And your selection.
John Carpenter's a Vamp.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, so why should people watch this flick today, right now? Why are they going out and watching vampires?
Well, if you're like me, then you like blood, guts, gore, swearing, and action. And throw in a Baldwin brother.
Yeah, the shitty Baldwin.
Yeah, well, yeah, but
okay.
It still makes it fun. And James Woods, so you can't go wrong. Well, I mean, you can go wrong, but... I mean, if you like all of those things, then you should gear this up and watch it.
Okay.
Because it's got everything. If you want to watch people die and get torn in half and whatever, you should watch it then. I also like the take on this of how their vampires die versus like other similar vampire stories, I guess.
You really have to fucking work in this movie to kill a vampire.
It's like they're working extra hard. This isn't Buffy where you just stab them and dust.
Yeah.
You got to drag it out into the sun or they like hammer the spike into their heart.
Yeah.
And even then it doesn't look like they're dead. So it's like extra work and extra gore.
Yeah.
That's what makes you want to watch it. That plus it's got that 90s vibe. That's for sure.
And it's interesting too, because a lot of 90s films that you think about in the horror genre that are kind of pop culture-y films are more geared towards teen audiences, which I totally feel this is not.
Not at all, no. The color of language in this, let's say, is not meant for a preteen. I'm going to go to the movies. No.
That first kill that, like, the master vampire.
Yeah.
We were talking about this off air a bit, where the hand goes through the guy and it
right
rips
up.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
So good. And then it splits slowly of him like coming apart and falling to the ground.
Yeah, it still looks really good.
Oh, yeah, even now. Like, it looks great. And like rewatching it, I was like, I forget how cheesy this is going to be. But really, it's not that bad. It's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
All the kills are good. You got some choice word usage. You got some hookers.
Yep. And that and hookers treated very poorly.
Very poorly.
Very poorly.
Very, very poorly.
Oh, man. We were talking, too, about that flashback sequence. The montage sequence.
Yeah.
Where James Wood and Billy Baldwin are walking down the road with I don't know the actress's name. Sorry. But
Charlie. What's her name? Katrina. In,
Okay. And James Woods
just like shoving her
into the
ground.
Oh,
yeah. This way, bitch. This way.
Oh, and that scene where he's got the fucking gun in her mouth.
Mm.
And, he used some choice language that I was like, oh, man. Fuck.
Oh. Suck on this, Uke.
Insert C word here.
Okay.
Yeah, I like when Anthony, the Baldwin brother, hits her after she bites him.
Yeah.
And James Woods comes back and he's like, what happened here? He's like, nothing, I had to hit her. But now he's all offended, like, well, why'd you hit her? Like, damage the merchandise kind of thing? Like, we need her to get to find the master. Oh my God. But, like, it's okay if I push her, but if you hit her, it's not okay. Yeah. It's Valak, isn't it?
Oh, it's Valak.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I love the hair and the...
Yeah, very cliche vampire look.
Oh, yeah,
look.
Chiseled, like, jaw, like... Mm-hmm. Fully, just full-on vampire. Like, that's what it should be. Long, dark hair, tall.
Mm-hmm. And he's just ripping through everybody's...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like he...
Doesn't matter.
Really, really good performance. That being said, you don't... One thing that Trevor said, because he's taping the show separately. He's taping his contribution to The Fog separately because he couldn't be here today for the panel. So he already came in and taped his stuff. And one thing he said about this film is, like, you really do have a hard time finding someone to root for in this film.
Oh, yeah, you do.
Because you don't really care about James Woods.
No.
And you definitely don't care about Daniel Baldwin.
No.
Who I just called Billy Baldwin, but we were going to let it go. It's a Baldwin.
It's a Baldwin. There's many. They all look the same.
But yeah, you don't care about any of these people. You almost feel worse.
I kind of felt bad for the hooker.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I identified with the hooker, and what does that say about...
Well, yeah, but that's what's interesting about this flick in general, is the fact that you... The first kill in the movie is the quote-unquote good guys.
Yeah.
Everyone that the good guys interact with, they treat them like absolute trash.
Which is, like, weird also.
Yeah.
And it's, like, good guy or... Bad guy. You're not really...
No, you never... It's all just one gray area. You're just watching a bunch of people kill each other. And that's really interesting.
If anything, I want the priest at the beginning that dies. Yeah, Giovanni. Plus Giovanni. I mean, come on. You want him to live, and he gets knocked off in the first, what is that, 15 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, but I really wanted him. I wanted to identify with him, and now I can't.
Mm-hmm.
It's taken away.
Oh, man.
That's how I felt
about
it.
That is the character, and even like the little bit of like the scene where he's having a beer, and you're like, that's really weird.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I like it.
But he like
rock and roll priest.
He's and he's like been with these guys for a while. Yeah. Like he has a camaraderie with them. Yeah. But then also you're kind of like, there's a priest and a bunch of hookers and some bunch of dudes that look like bikers all in the same room. Like I'm a little confused as to what's going on.
It really does hold up on a rewatch. It looks great.
Yeah.
Especially when you consider it's 1998.
Oh yeah.
A lot of the effects look way better than stuff that traditionally you associate with that time.
Oh yeah.
And particularly vampire flicks.
Yeah.
And it's got Carpenter's signature flair to it.
Oh yeah, it's very dramatic.
Mm. That being said, he didn't score this one, and the music is a little over the top.
A little bit.
It reminds me almost of the music in Hard Target a little bit, and all those like slow walking against the wind shots.
I always think of that in like an old western kind of like very old western, like we're meeting at the center square at noon to draw our guns and kill each other. It's very much like that.
Exactly. And that's where I was kind of going with it, is that it feels like a Carpenter film because of his love for Westerns, and this is just one more opportunity to do it. We talked about Escape from New York being a little bit that way.
Yeah.
And a lot of his work is kind of reminiscent of that. And, so although it in many ways is an outlier in his catalog, there are still these little touches of Carpenter in there. So you don't get his score, but you get the pacing that you're used to in a Carpenter film.
Oh, yeah.
You don't get that timeless of a time feel. You get a very 90s film.
Yeah.
It doesn't ride the line. It isn't one of those things where you can say it it's something I can watch 20 years down the line and not put it in the 90s. It is very much then.
Oh, yeah.
But conversely, it really does have... It has something special, really fun. I really like it.
Yeah, it's like a...
Thank you for nominating it. We were joking, you always do the Dark Horse.
I know, I always do the Dark... Well, I have a soft spot in my heart for the Dark Horse movies, yeah. And this is one of them. And I think a lot of people don't watch it because it looks like it's going to be cheesy, or it looks like it's going to maybe not have like the effects that it does and give off that kind of vibe, but it's totally a good watch. It's worth the afternoon sit down and relax, or at night, just watch it.
Yeah.
And I like the effect, like all of the effects are great and the kills are great. And the swearing is like next level. And when they drag the vampires out into the sun, the explosion of fire is pretty exciting. And it makes it a little bit more, climactic in like how it's done, as opposed to like a quick it's like boom, it's over. Yeah. It's not over. There's like continuous fire, flame, blood. There's an excess of it, which makes it more interesting.
Yeah. It doesn't depart from the vampire lore, but it's one of a kind.
Yeah.
I like it.
Like nothing else is really like this isn't as cliche, let's say. Like, in terms of, like, how you kill them is the same, but how it's depicted isn't a cliche how every other vampire movie is, which I like. I think it adds something to that. And they don't do the garlic. They don't do any of that stuff, right? So,
and they talk about it, too.
Yeah, they talk about it. They address it.
Bullshit, which is interesting.
And, of course, it has the ultimate, like, what's a vampire's goal? To walk in the sun. Like, that's the ultimate what they want to do, right? Because you'll never get that. Sure, you have immortality, but you'll never get to experience a sunrise or daylight again. So, of course, like that's the end goal of like the master in this case, trying to get the black cross and perform the ritual or the exorcism and have this walk in the daylight. And then you're unstoppable, essentially, because you have no weakness, really. You're immortal. You can walk in the sun and you can kill anything that moves in front of you at your will. So I think it's like good for that.
It is a little convenient how James Woods just knows.
Yeah.
He knows right away.
Right away, this is what's going on.
Yeah. He just like puts it together instantly.
Yeah.
He's like, someone's fucking us over.
Yeah.
You know, someone's going after
this.
It's
going to be the church.
It's going to be the church. Someone's going after the Black Cross.
So, but I want to briefly ask you about your take on the ending where he gives the Baldwin 2 days to run off with the hooker before he hunts them down and he's going to kill both of them because they've both been bitten. Well, she's been bitten and then she bites him, which I think is hilarious. Like, well, you gave me 2 days, so I'm going to give you 2 days to go off, but then I'm going to hunt you down.
Yeah.
Even though you're my friend and like comrade in arms.
Yeah.
That doesn't matter. Now we're enemies, frenemies.
Yeah.
I kind of liked that.
Yeah.
So if you got a rainy afternoon or an evening and you're looking for something to watch, this is it.
All right.
Got blood, you got guts, you got killing, you got swearing. What else can you need? That's all you need in life. That's it.
Perfect.
Yeah. Watch it.
It's a good flick.
Yeah.
And tweet at the show and let us know if Crystal gets your vote. Tweet at Merle Podcast or... email the show, whatever.
Vote for me.
Because she's competitive.
Dark Horse. Vote for the Dark Horse.
I respect that.
Yeah.
All right. So happy Halloween, everyone. Remember to reach out to us on social media at Mermel Podcast on Twitter at MRML Podcast. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, pretty much everywhere that podcasts can be heard, Google Play Music. You can find us at our website, moviesfrommylife.com. And I think that's about it. So thanks for hanging out with us.
It's been done.
Yeah.
It's been done to death.